listening to the Online Supercoach Podcast, the place where business owners create breakthroughs. Here's your host, AJ Mirza.
Welcome to the Online Supercoach Show. Today, I have a very special guest. He is billed as the personal trainer for smart, strong, successful women. Dating coach Evan Markatz has been helping singles since 2003. He's the author of 4 books, most recently, Believe in Love, and has been featured in hundreds of media outlets, including Today, New York Times, and CNN. In 2016, Evan's blog got over 10 million readers, and over 1,000 women graduated from Love You, his 6-month video course that helps women understand men and find love. Evan is very happily married and lives in Los Angeles with his wife and their 2 children. Evan, thanks for being on my show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, AJ.
Absolutely. To kick things off, what is a quote or a mantra that fires you up?
I would probably say, what would you do if you knew you could not fail? I'm very big on the idea that you could fail, and it's not new. It's very Silicon Valley these days, but you could fail all the time and try new things, but failing means you're trying. It doesn't mean you are yourself a failure. So you try things and you don't internalize things when they don't work, and it's sort of on to the next. And I think most people, whether they're facing challenges in dating or in entrepreneurship, have a little bit of trouble bouncing back from failure. And I'm an expert in failure.
Wow, love that. And that's a great quote to start with. I know you've been in the game since 2003. And I would imagine when you initially started, you were just doing one-on-one coaching.
It actually started, I wrote a book, right? I was a Hollywood screenwriter. So that was the first thing I failed at. And that was my 20s. My entire 20s was Hollywood. And I was in Project Greenlight with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and Matt Damon gave me his email address. He's like, dude, I'm going to work for you one day. And never heard from him again. And when I turned 30, I said, I'm not going to be the guy who's a 40-year-old guy trying to sell a screenplay. I got to figure out something else to do. So I got a job answering phones at an online dating company in Beverly Hills in 2001 while I was putting myself through UCLA Film School, where my backup plan was to be a professor. And after 9 months of working there, I realized, oh my God, I know more about online dating than anybody I've talked to. So I'm a writer. I might as well write a book about online dating. And it was the first thing that I ever did that went better than expected. Everything else, I always seemed to not get over the hump, but I sold my book in like a month, and I built a website writing people's online dating profiles called eCyrano.com. It was my first business in 2003. And because no one had ever done that before, it became a news story. So suddenly it was New York Times and CNN and USA Today, et cetera. And I dropped out of film school and started writing people's online dating profiles at $99 a pop. And that was my first business, doing this thing that nobody else had done. And pretty soon There were more people than I could handle, and I had to hire freelancers to write profiles for me, and I kept raising my prices. And people would say, oh my God, this profile works so well. What do I do now? How do I flirt? And I was like, really? All right, well, let's get on Match.com. And so online dating profiles led to online dating coaching, and online dating coaching led to dating coaching. And that's where the one-to-one coaching model really began. But the original business was, if I were a better business person, it would have been a scalable version of an online dating profile writing service, very much the way Career Builder helps people with resumes on Monster.com or something.
Love it. That's really, really cool. And what inspired you to go the route of information products, you know, when you're developing this program and seeing, you know, the possibilities of online dating? What inspired you to start to leverage your knowledge?
There's another dating coach that I was friendly with, and we were 2 of the first guys to do this, to really plant our flag and make up this job essentially of dating coach, which pretty much didn't exist, before, you know, the early mid 2000s. And we would go out to lunch and we would talk shop, and he'd say, all right, what did you make last year? And And I'd say, all right, what did you make last year? And we were both sort of stuck at the same level for a few years. And it was a good living. We were both single guys. It wasn't a huge deal. And then one year he comes back to me and he's increased his revenue by like 60%. And I said, oh my God, how did you do wow. that? And he said, I hired this team and they're information marketers. And I just give them my ideas and they sell products. And it was a light bulb moment. And I started to investigate it. I hired a business coach who helped me just do some basic things that entrepreneurs need to do to get out of the weight of being a solopreneur. And in 2007, she helped me hire an assistant and develop systems and create my first information product called Finding the One Online. It was a comprehensive online dating program, 7 hours of audio, 180-page transcript, 35-page workbook. And I launched that the day of my wedding, and it paid for my wedding.
Wow.
And I hired this other guy's team, the coach I was telling you about. I hired this other guy's team in a little bit later, like 2010. We narrowed the niche. We focused on, instead of just being a dating coach in general or an online dating coach, I became a dating coach for smart, strong, successful women, rebranded, mm-hmm. because that was 80% of my clientele anyway. And my business quintupled over the next 7 years.
Wow. There's so much nuggets of wisdom here. First and foremost, I want to discuss your ability to invest in yourself, because seeing that, you really understood that to really take your business to the next level, you had to find the right team, find the right coach. And, was it always easy for you to invest in your business to create this growth?
That's a really good question. And it's, my answer is probably not going to be what you would expect it to be. No, in fact, I'm not very good at investing, in my own personal growth. Mm-hmm. It's one of my weaknesses. I don't know if it's that I'm cheap or that I'm stubborn enough to think I know enough, but mm-hmm. unlike some people who always have a coach or always have a mentor, I had one for the year of 2007 and I have one right now. In between, I did not have coaching. It's not that I wasn't learning, but I was working with a team and together we were like, all right, we know enough. We all were on the same mailing list and we're learning and we're sharing knowledge. And I would do a Jeff Walker. Now I get a Jeff Walker product or, watch a Brendan Burchard video. And, I would pick up pieces, but I never really did invest in myself the way other folks have. And I think it actually stunted my growth. I was trying to carve my way through the jungle with a machete instead of realizing someone else had carved out a clearer path, which kind of brings me to where I am today. Again, belatedly, and this is a 14-year-old business. It's very successful. It's a 7-figure business. And last summer, I invested in myself. I went to Yannick Silver's Camp Maverick.
Nice.
I read Ryan Dice's Invisible Selling Machine and Ryan Levesque's Ask, and it was like my head exploded. I was like, dude, you should have been doing this 10 years ago. And so if anything, I think I'm a really good example of what – some creativity, hard work, and intelligence could get you to do without investing in yourself. I'm successful almost in spite of myself.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that, because you definitely have different ends of the spectrum. You have some people who invest in themselves so much, but they don't implement as much. You know, people who always have a different coach or in like 5-6 different masterminds.
Yeah, yeah.
Buying books and information products, but maybe 10% of that is actually implemented. Whereas, you're a hardcore implementer. And then when you actually do invest in yourself, you maximize it because you've done a lot of the work already to create the foundation.
I think you could always play, the path not taken. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, pre-call, you talk about your superpower. It's probably the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours. Like, what's the thing that you do better than, you know, hopefully, you know, most people in your niche. And for me, you know, I'm a writer who failed in Hollywood, who happens to give dating and relationship advice. So writing and speaking and having insights about human and relationship dynamics, that's my superpower. I'm pretty quick and adept at creating content. And my belief, and I see this in dating and relationships as well, is that your superpower, your strength, is on the flip side of a weakness, right? And again, you could extrapolate this to anything. If you're, you know, if you're a workaholic, you might not be a very good relationship partner. If you are gorgeous and you think that, you know, the everybody on the planet wants you, it may be a little hard to settle down. If you're really intelligent, you might be very arrogant or condescending or difficult or moody. So good traits come with bad traits. And being a prolific content creator, for some people who struggle with content, sounds like a wonderful problem to have. When you're me, it becomes a crutch. It's always easier for me to create new than it is to organize old. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not a great systems thinker. I'm not a great organizer. But I have a blog and a newsletter and a podcast, and I could create forever. And at a certain point, the people who are the best in business are the ones who know when to stop creating and organize better systems.
Love that. Love that. And a point that I wanted to touch upon when you mentioned earlier that you niche down to smart, strong, successful women that had massive growth in your business, you know, getting a lot more hyper-focused. And I know that you get incredible results because you literally have more success stories than a lot of dating coaches have clients. So I guess boiling down your superpower, like, what do you feel is some of the core tenets that allowed you to get so much amazing results for women?
That's a really rough question. I mean, we could take that in a thousand directions. To be a good guest, are you asking for dating and relationship advice or business advice? Because I feel like there's a fork in the road here.
I'm asking for dating and relationship advice, more along the lines of like, okay, there's a lot of dating coaches that focus on successful women per se, right? But you bring a unique mix to it. So it's more like, what is it about your superpower that gets these amazing results, and how does that differentiate you from the other dating coaches?
Okay. I don't have a prepared answer, so I might sort of stumble my way through this one. First of all, right, there's that premise, be first or be best. You've heard that before.
Yes.
Right. It's not my place to say whether I'm the best at what I do. Obviously, I have confidence and I've had success, but I'm definitely just about the first person to do this. So I carved out my territory early. I was consistent in that I've blogged twice a week for 10 years. Mm. I never stopped. And so where other people have to worry about JVs and list building and Facebook ads, I've never had to pay a dollar for anything. Right. My list comes naturally from people Googling stuff and ending up on my website. So that's something that my strength worked out in that consistency matters on Google and how they view you and rank you. So I've never had to spend money other than just taking the time to do what I do naturally and do well. And then as far as a unique value proposition, I'm a man who gives women dating and relationship advice to help them understand men. And surprisingly, this is another thing that nobody else had done before. It's usually middle-aged women helping middle-aged women fall in love and giving their version of events, or, you know, 30-something guys acting as pickup artists, telling guys how to get action, never really telling them how to be men, or never telling them how to get married or choose a partner who could last for 40 years. But men are generally not online looking to be better husbands and fathers. If a guy's looking for advice online, and that's rare, women tend to ask for more advice. The men who were coming to me were really, really nice guys. but they were only 20% of my market. So I just listened to what my list was saying, and the people who were the most likely to invest in coaching, I realized were the female equivalents of me.
Wow.
Right? And that was the aha. The very same thing that I needed to learn to choose my wife is what I needed to teach women like me to choose their husbands. So it became a process of reverse engineering what I did that worked for me. And that happened to be something, again, that stood out in a marketplace that was filled with men teaching men and women teaching women. A guy saying, you want to understand men? Ask a man. Is surprisingly revolutionary in this industry.
That is amazing. Yes. Yes. No, there's so many great points there. And in terms of making that decision to, you know, focus on the 80%, you know, was there some hesitation in terms of, wow, you know, seeing the writing on the wall, like, you know, this is 80% of my market, or was it a quick decision? I'm going to move forward.
No, it was hard. Cause I think anybody who's faced with the idea of niching, right, mm-hmm. capturing a smaller portion of the market, but dominating it versus being everything to everybody, it's scary to cut off potential buyers. And I can help men, and I liked helping men. It was ultimately a business decision, and it was one that was aided by the fact that the guy who shared his tech team with me was also a dating coach, but he predominantly helped men. And one of the stipulations of him sharing his tech team with me was that I not compete with him, and I completely understood. So he focused on coaching men, and I focused on coaching women. So my hand was, in a way, sort of forced. And I was willing to say, hey, I'm going to, in order to experience some form of hypergrowth, I'm going to limit my market and go deeper rather than wide, instead of being all things to all people. And I let go of the original brand and label I had, which was online dating guy, right? I mean, a lot of people in my world still think of me as the online dating guy, the East Cyrano profile writing guy. And I did everything I could to shed that label, even though it was the thing that made my name, because I didn't want to get stuck in that niche, which I didn't see as profitable and broad. People begrudgingly date online. They don't love doing it. But if your business model consists of single women who want to find love, it's like getting in the funeral business or the tax business. You're never going to go out of business.
Love it. Love it. Yes. And, you know, currently you are one of the top dating coaches on the planet, and really having millions of readers of your blog. You know, you're very prolific with your content, and you have books and all that. And of course, like, you're living in your superpower. So this makes you world-class. I'm curious, like, let's say on a weekly basis, what would you say are like your top three activities that put you in a flow state, that allow you to operate in your zone of genius?
Oh gosh, it's a very entrepreneur question. and we all, you know, I think we're all trying to become better at what we do, optimize. I have my journal, my 5-minute journal, that kind of helps me focus on what are the top three activities I want to do today. And those kind of things have been written about by far more efficient Tim Ferriss types than myself. I think the hardest part for me, and again, this is not exactly an answer to your question, but it's the first thing that comes to mind, is that the thing that puts me in my flow state is not the thing that makes me the most money.
Mm.
So we have an inherent problem, right? What do I like doing the best? I like writing, right? And answering people's questions. So writing blog posts. I could pass a day writing a month of blog posts like that. But blog posts is sort of very low level, you know, like you talk about the value of an individual blog post. I'd be better off spending the same time writing a new product or writing a new webinar. Writing a sales page is work.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pain in the ass, and I don't love doing it. because ultimately it's helping people, but the process of really breaking that thing down into a science isn't as fun. So the thing that puts me into flow state, my superpower, are the things that actually don't make me as much money. It's coaching and writing.
Wow.
Does that make sense? So it's a conundrum, because for me, the thing that's going to grow my business is the thing that is the most painful to me. It's, you know, working with my COO to plot out the next calendar year and run numbers on an Excel spreadsheet and talk about upsells and downsells and click-throughs and conversions. And these are all the things that I don't love doing, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're a creative, if you identify as that, you know, you find yourself swimming upstream a lot. And that's why it's really important to find other people who you can work with, which is its own dynamic, who could supplement you and help to carry you and take leadership roles. The person who is the right side of my brain, her name is Kim. And, you know, she pulls ideas out of my head and then puts it on some sort of Gliffy chart and then makes an Excel spreadsheet. And I mean, thank God for her, because if I were left to do that myself, I might just say, hell, I'll just stay an hourly coach.
Wow, that is amazing.
And it's important to know what your strengths and weaknesses and limitations and passions are. And my time isn't best used learning to do the back end of Infusionsoft. There are some do-it-yourself people who are wonderful. And again, God bless them. That's not my flow state.
That's right.
Right. It's being the front man of the band is my flow state.
Yeah. Being the front man of the band, 100%. What I find most fascinating and very, very respectable is that, you know, you have 14 years of experience. I mean, you are, like I said, one of the top dating coaches on this planet, and you have a choice to literally just create products and teach and just write your blog, write books, but you prefer to still have coaching clients. In fact, you have private coaching clients and group coaching clients. So please let the listeners know why you continue to coach people on an intimate level.
I think everybody has to get in touch with, I want to avoid saying any buzzwords that are overdone, because people talk about purpose and people talk about authenticity, and you say those words enough and it's like your brains fall out your ears. The truth is I'm a people person. I'm an extrovert. I like people. I'm curious about people. My life is the most introverted life you could possibly imagine. I wake up, I go downstairs to my office, I type, right? And then I come out and I play with my kids and I eat dinner with my wife, and I could go weeks without seeing anybody. And if you're an extrovert and you lead an introverted life, you need human contact. And so for me, it's my way of finding joy in connecting with people. It's still a work in progress. So yes, if I have enough passive revenue that I don't need to coach at all, but I like coaching. I like talking to people my schedule. I coach every other week. So I have full weeks where I could write without interruption, but every other week I coach for 3 hours a day, 3 days a week with private clients. And I build relationships with them and I watch them grow and see them blossom and find love and get invited to weddings. And, you know, put it this way. I got a program called Love You. It's a 6-month video curriculum, exercises, audio transcripts, the whole nine yards. I've launched an evergreen version of it where people could just take the course and self-guided, go through the video, you know, weekly video modules, tagline, give me 5 minutes a day, I'll give you a husband.
Love it.
And, you know, I did a launch and 500 people took that course at once, created $40,000 a month in passive revenue. I launched the same course 6 months before that with 250 women paying $2,000 for the course with weekly coaching in an online community, right? Mm. The group course with fewer people meant so much more to me than knowing that 500 strangers that I would never meet, never hear from, not know their names, went through my course. I'm hopeful that those people got value out of Love You, but I don't know them. I don't know their story. I don't know their blind spots. And so I don't feel a personal connection. And I realized you can do a great job in life, but it's not, for me, the money is the byproduct of a job well done. It's not the end game. So it's what makes you happy, do well at that, and the money's gonna come. You're like, you don't have to worry. If you're serving your clients well, I know people who are just pure internet marketers and all they can do is think of optimizing their sales pages by changing a font or a headline and testing. And we do testing, we do all that. But I would not be happy making $1 million a month and not talking to people. I'd be miserable. So I get to kind of have my cake and eat it too. Have a business where 80% of my revenue is still passive revenue, but the 20% I like the most is the relationship part.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. And truly a person that is living in their superpower and serving at the highest level. And I definitely want to touch upon like why, because, you know, most people, if they had a choice, they could press one button and have money go into their bank account and just kind of do as they please, right? But you are in a place where you want to serve and you want to be, have this intimate connection with your clients. I'm curious, why does that make you so happy?
I want to answer this appropriately and thoroughly. When you're in the business of dating and relationships, you come with a very logical mind, right? I was supposed to be a lawyer. I ended up being a writer, but I'm logical first. Mm-hmm. The metric that I use for coaching, and probably anybody should use it, and it's probably easier for data-driven people in information marketing, is does this work? Does this not work? It's not how I feel about it, right? I might think this is a great course or a sales page, but if it doesn't convert, it doesn't matter how I feel about it. And the same thing happens in relationships. It's what works, what doesn't. So I'm very big on what works, and it doesn't take much to go do your studies and realize that the happiest people on the planet are not the people with the most money in their pocket, nor are they the people with the most power. Right? People who are the happiest people on the planet are the ones who are most happily married, people who feel the most connection with other people. Right? And again, without getting overly political, do we think for a half a second that Donald Trump is a happy person? Have you ever seen any evidence that he's happy? No, he's powerful. He has to win, right? But anybody who conducts himself like that publicly is probably pretty miserable, starting fights with everybody, lying and cheating, right? That's a sign of misery. So again, I don't want to get too off track with the politics because it's not really the point. We could. I'm in Hollywood. Talk about every celebrity that is goes into rehab or gets divorced. How much evidence do we need to know that money, fame, and power does not necessarily correlate with happiness? And so I've figured out what works for me. I don't want to work 12-hour days. I don't want to be on the road 30 weeks a year playing to stadiums, even if I could. Right? For me, I work 9 to 5:30 every day. I play with my kids. I eat dinner with my wife. Right? And we have a really active social life because I like people. We had a karaoke party on Saturday night, a bunch of drunken 40-year-olds staying until 3 in the morning, singing their hearts out. And that's how I roll, is surrounded by people that I like. Life is too short to spend it fixated on how much money you have, because you know what you need to live? Not nearly as much as you think you do. Everything beyond that is gravy. I was making $250,000 before I hired my business coach in 2008. I didn't need any more than that to live then. I don't need any more to live now. So anything you make beyond that is just a dick measuring contest. Right? And it's a slight exaggeration. Obviously, you could have more comfort. But you don't need more stuff. You save for your retirement, save for your kids' college funds, you know, buy the latest gadgets and whatnot. But the truth is, you know, the person who dies with the most money isn't the happiest person. It's just the person who dies with the most money. So I think I have a very moderate view of these things. I want to be the best dating coach. I want to be the highest end dating coach. I want to be the most successful dating coach. But if it means I have to work nights and weekends to do it, fuck it.
That is brilliant. So much gold in there. For the people listening, that entire 10 minutes was amazing, because it's true, right? The studies have shown that really, let's say, if you know, in the U.S., if you're making over $70,000 a year in income, you're not going to get significantly happier. But many people think, okay, well, if I make $700,000 a year, then I'll be 10 times happier. But that is not the case.
Yeah. That's a great study that you cited, AJ. It talks about marginal utility. If you go from 25 to 75, you're going to have a big jump in happiness. But to go if on a 1 to 10 scale, to go from 75,000 to 300,000, your happiness will go from like a 7.1 to a 7.4. It's once you reach a certain level of comfort, it's not about that. It really, people just throw themselves into their work because they feel disconnected. And you'll find a lot of 40-year-old men, 50-year-old men, guys older than you, right? Guys in this circuit, information marketing, they might tell you how to get rich. Right? I'm much more interested in how to get happy.
Yeah, that's very profound. And, you know, what's interesting is, like, you're one of the pioneers in the information marketing field. And I'm sure that a lot of your peers from like the year 2000, you know, they're chasing that elusive dragon of, you know, focusing on, you know, 8 figures, 9 figures, eventually going into billions. And you could see that having that single-minded focus of just, you know, doubling the income every year and growing in that way, many times it's not the happiest path to live.
It's a path. I think that's the needle that I'm trying to thread here. I'm not trying to make anybody who's concerned with profits wrong or feel bad or say that I'm better than you or anything like that. This is very individual. If you're happy, because again, there's something wonderful and exciting about hitting new heights and beating out the competition and feeling good about your work. I just think that there's a cost to it, and there's a human cost to it. If you're spending 12 hours a day working or 30 weeks a year on the road, whoever your partner is doesn't get very much. It's hard to be, right, an A-plus entrepreneur and an A-plus husband.
Great point. And do you feel that people could have it all in terms of having an A-plus marriage, you know, financial wealth, fitness at the highest level?
Yes. And there are anomalies and examples of people who do. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that, you know, certainly I would want to listen to. It helps to get to know them, not just their public persona. Just because someone says something doesn't mean it's true. We don't know half the stuff that goes on behind the scenes and who's happy and who's not. But, you know, it's certainly something I aspire to. But with a caveat, what do you call an A-plus business, AJ? For me, if I still have plenty of room for growth, but if I'm running a $5 million a year business, right? I mean, if I'm running a $2 million a year business, it's an A+. But if I'm running a $5 million a year business, A+, and I get out of work at 5:30 and I could drive my kids to soccer practice, and if I do a speaking engagement, it's occasional and I do it for fun, but I don't have to be on the road pounding the pavement at conferences and kissing ass, I feel like I've got it all. I mean, personally, and you talked about fitness. All right, so, and I have enough money that I could have a personal trainer 3 times a week from 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning. But I could do it within the context of a normal life. I don't have to wake up at 4 a.m. I don't have to go to bed at 4 p.m. I don't have to be constantly stressed about having 12 people on my team in an HR department. You don't need to have a monster scalable business to have an A+ life.
That's a brilliant point. Yes, it's all about perspective, right? It's basically, you know, in your heart what's optimized for you in terms of your relationships, your fitness, your happiness?
I'm an everything in moderation person. And no, I mean, here's our best example. Who's the most amazing businessman on the planet? I mean, Elon Musk?
Yeah, he's touted as definitely one of the top entrepreneurs.
Right. I mean, just a big vision, doesn't say no, fiercely intelligent, right? God, I mean, like Elon Musk is just a god among men.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be Mrs. Elon Musk.
Yeah, I've heard about his marriages and relationships.
Or Mrs. Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the cost to that, which is to say nothing about them as human beings. They might be really wonderful human beings, but their relentless pursuit of excellence in business and to fulfill their grandiose dreams means that some niceties go aside. Balance goes aside, and that's a choice. Someone would rather be Elon Musk. Many people would rather be Elon Musk than Evan Marquez. Nothing wrong with that. Zero wrong with that. You're gonna make some big things happen in the world. I know enough about happiness to know that that is not my path to happiness, and I could be happy with a few million dollars. I don't need a billion. For what? I have everything.
Absolutely. Such a brilliant point. And just like you said earlier, it's a path and everyone's entitled to their own path. And I want to close off this interview with a question. And it's really going to be more so legacy-based question. Let's say we're going into the future. 50 years from now, you're at the end of your career.
50 years from now, I'm probably dead, but I appreciate that. I'm 44, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, longevity and science, okay. They say we'll be living to 120 in 50 years from now. But, you know, let's say you have robust health and you decide to end your career and, you know, time to, like, put everything to the side. What does Evan Marquez want to be remembered for?
Oh, gosh. That's another question. It's too grandiose to acknowledge.
Well, what comes up first?
I think feelings and adjectives come up for me first. I want to be remembered as a guy with integrity who did the right thing, not the expedient thing. Fiercely ethical, fiercely moral. Dedicated to self-improvement, taking responsibility for who I am, how I'm perceived by others, and using that level of ethics and dedication to help others become the same way, to empower people to be stronger, more confident, happier, specifically within the realm of human relationships. This business that I'm in now for 14 years, I love it. There's more to go. I have, I don't know, probably 5-10 more years of ideas in this, and I already know what I want my next business to be, which is just as big as this, something that affects everybody. And I want to be in a financial position where I could devote all my resources to it. I don't have an exit strategy like someone buying me, but there'll be a point where I'll feel like I will have done everything I could do in this space. And then I'll spend the years 55 to 75 in a completely new space. And I want to be recognized for the body of that work. And on a micro level, to be a good husband and a good father. There's what readers think of me, which I can't entirely control. And the number of people I've affected and the number of marriages and children that came partially from my work. But on a micro level, I just want to be a good husband and father. And so, it's hard to say anything that's not cliche.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to talk about being a billionaire. I'm not going to talk about being a thought leader or a change agent. I want to be known as a good person who is sincere and left a positive impact on everybody who encountered him.
Wow, that is an inspiring vision. And I really want to acknowledge you because, you know, this interview, I had this game plan that was set in the beginning of it. I actually was introduced to your work from a friend of mine named Sam. And I was like, wow, you know, this guy's so talented. And I was reading your blogs and I had all these questions prepared. But the moment we started speaking, you just inspired me to go in a whole different angle. And I'm so glad that I did because I feel like I got to experience a different side of you.
Well, thank you for having me and going with that instinct. This is fun because it's not what I usually get to talk about. Most of my life is talking about very specifically dating and relationships. And thank you for teaching me how to be a better podcast interview. I did a podcast the other day and I didn't do a very good job of interviewing, and listening to you, I could hear why. I was too rigid about following a script and not really going with the flow. And listening to you, I realized that I've worked to do in that arena.
Appreciate it. Yeah, you definitely brought a lot of knowledge and wisdom here. And like I've been taking vigorous notes as I'm talking to you. So I'm getting a lot of insights about my own personal life and my business. And I'm sure a lot of listeners are as well. Where could people go to learn more about you, Evan?
As we said, I'm very Googleable, but the easiest way to find me is to go to www.evanmarkkatz.com, EvanMarkKatz.com. I have 1,400 blog posts that have answered every dating and relationship question you've ever had, plus the Love You podcast, plus a survey that lets you know your number one relationship challenge, plus infinite amounts of free advice in your inbox. So I give away more free stuff on the internet than pretty much anybody. It is my strength and it is also my weakness, and it is your job to take advantage of it.
Love it. Love it. I'll definitely provide all of your websites, your podcasts, your amazing books, and everything that you provide on the show notes on my website, onlinesupercoach.com. Evan, it was a pleasure having you on my show, and thank you for this interview.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you, AJ.
Thanks for listening to the Online Supercoach Podcast. If you like this show, share it with your friends and subscribe on iTunes. For show notes and for free training on how you can attract, convert, and deliver like a million-dollar online coach, visit OnlineSupercoach.com.